You're listening to part two of the talk entitled The Primacy of the Ear, The Road from Music to Ethics, which was given by Gilad Atzmon at a meeting in Brighton on Monday, the 7th of January, 2008.
So, basically, I was living in London. I left Israel with a clear plan never to see this place again unless it becomes a real peaceful place in which the Jewish shrinking majority would learn to leave their neighbors. I just didn't want to see this place. I didn't want to visit Israel. I came once or twice in 94, 95 because I was still very successful and I had to sort some things. But I didn't, 2007, so it's like probably 12 years that I didn't visit in Israel. And I don't call it Israel anymore. I realize that it's occupied Palestine and it will be Palestine sooner than you think. Inshallah. However, in London, I confronted some very interesting realizations and sensations and feelings. Obviously, I was missing something. But it was very shocking for me to find out that what I was missing wasn't really Tel Aviv, the metropolitan, the happy clubbing that Tel Aviv could offer. What I was really missing was this Palestinian small restaurant in Yefet Street in Jaffa, in Yafo. What I was really missing was these mountains, the landscape. You know, you've been in Israel, I assume some of you. I'm sure that you've been in kind of on your way to Palestine. And when you land in Palestine, there is a very unique breeze with a very unique smell in the spring. And then I realized that what I miss, my home, was Palestine. Israel is a state. Palestine is a land. At a certain stage, an Israeli drummer moved to London. Asaf. You know Asaf. You probably saw him, my drummer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody thinks that he's Palestinian, but he's not. He charges me now when people call him Palestinian. Because his name is Asaf. Asaf Sirkis. Sirkis is a kind of Christian Lebanese name. And everyone want to believe that he's Palestinian. But he isn't. However, Asaf is an incredible drummer. And we started to play together. You know, I could play jazz with everyone in town. But when we start to play together, we start to go to some kind of oriental... You know, the thing that I couldn't play with anyone else. He knew all the grooves, he knew all the rhythms, he knew everything. He's an incredible musician. And I told him, Asaf is not politically orientated at all. I told him, listen man, I really want to do this. I have this idea to start to take Israeli music and to Palestinize it. So to take, because I thought, if I do that, Israeli people may start to think. They just think of all their kind of belligerent Judeo-Nazi song about them coming back to their own land, and they, maybe if I'll give it kind of a Palestinian flavor, they will listen to it. Ah, they may want to come to their home as well. However, this project was very successful in Britain. I think all my albums were nominated, but you know, my Excel album was best album of the year in various places, including BBC. In Israel, it wasn't a major success. I failed again. However, I realized that as much as I want to play Arabic music, as much as I love it, I was a complete failure in doing it. I wasn't good at all. It was very easy to convince guardian musical critics. Oh, Gilad Atwar is now in trouble! You know, the sound is exactly like the Israeli commander, you see? You know, I wonder why. No, because this is the only character that you know, so they crown me as the biggest Arab, and I'm not. It was crap, and I listened to it. Oh my God, you know, it's really bad. And I really wanted to do it, and I didn't get anywhere. Which is shocking, because this music was around me from the day I was born. Allahu Akbar. You hear it all the time. And wherever you go to a restaurant, you hear Farid El Atrash and Abed Halim Hafez and Kultum. It's there. It is there all the time. And it came out. Because within this total blindness of the other, we really were full with disrespect to Arab culture, to Arab music. They cannot read music. Who for fuck's sake needs to read music? You know. Do you know any jazz musician who can read music? I can't. I mean, I can read, but I don't know where it is, you know? It's like... And I was trying. By then, I was a professional musician, playing all over the world, and I cannot get it right. And I couldn't understand why. I realized that it's not something that is really wrong with my talent, but something that is really wrong with my approach. And then I realized that I didn't realize it was kind of pretty spontaneous. I realized that when I play and I stop for a second and I try to emulate the sound of the mosque, really to go back to my childhood and to try to remember it, or to reflect upon a sound that I heard a day before, and I just sing it. I find it far easier. It was far easier for me to pitch and to find the quarter tones. Because there is something that we have to understand. When we play jazz, these are notes. They can be written. We can put chord symbols on them, above them, and we know what is the reference. But when we have something that is Oriental or Arabic, if I would come with the notation, it would sound like, sounds like Israelis playing Arabic music. And the reason is that as much jazz, basically, you realize, is a Western music. It has a lot of Afro-Cuban influences, but it is a Western music that was evolving along together with the cultural industry. So the tunes are very, the bebop tunes are very short. They are 3 minutes, because I think that the time of records at the time was three minutes 20 seconds or something like that. So bebop tune. Next, you know, it's everything is very short, quick, you know. So the German Jews in Blue Note can sell them for a lot of money. When it came to our Arabic music, you listen to a mawal, which is an introduction to a tune, and it's 25 minutes. I remember I was touring when when the war in Iraq broke, and the friend from Lebanon sent me MP3, kind of millions of tunes on kind of a, like bag full with CDs, and we were listening to Abd Halim Hafez, and he was singing for hours, moving, just taking one note. I'm not as good as I wish to be, but it's just hours, and we listen to it and thought, how this stupid American think to win this war? And it's all about that. This culture, these people take their time, and they are not digital. They are analog. Between, we are not on the piano, but between low C and next octave up, it's not just 12 semitones. It's a continuum. And I couldn't get it right because I was already very, very westernized. And I had to deal with my fatal Western self-imposed disability. And I realized that when I start to sing in my gigs, if I try to sing every time before I play something, it set me, I don't know why, I would sing the quarter tones, and then when I play them, they will come out nicely and the way I want them, or close as I could, you know. But I always had the feeling that my band is not happy, because I could see that when I started to sing, they always kind of dropped the volume. And when it came to my last album, and we were kind of resting in the studio just one day before the recording, and Frank Harrison, you know Frank, obviously, he's from Brighton now, he lives in Brighton now. He told me, Gilad, why don't you sing? That's what you're doing for the last 2 years. Oh man, I am gonna, you don't like it. Oh, for sure we like it. Like, why do you drop the volume? I said, because we want to hear it. You know, oh, all right. So it kind of, two years I was really insecure about it. And what I started to do, I started actually to sing through the saxophone, which made it, to me, you know, to my ears, you know, it sounded very much like the ons from of in the mosques, like the muezzin, like the through the tannoy system. And it doesn't sound any more like saxophone, and it pretty much miraculously, I don't understand why, how, my saxophone, I developed kind of a new voice. And then I realized, and this is something that I would do in university, but I'm not gonna drag you into it, that what I really did in this process of singing, I eliminated or managed to fight against the primacy of the eye, which is the symptom of Western understanding, and especially Anglo-American, very much thanks to the Jew Husserl that you probably learned about in your institute, and the logical positivist that followed him, and phenomenology. And I surrendered to the primacy of the ear, because at the end of the day, I decided to play the saxophone because I heard Charlie Parker, not because I saw him, because I heard him in the radio. And I didn't know that he was black. And obviously, it's completely meaningless that he was. It was meaningless for me because I was too evolved in a very supremacist racist culture. Music is about the ear. And when I realized that music is about the ear, and I have to listen to my inner voice, this is when I started to realize that the ethics, what is right and what is wrong, is not an empirical issue. It's a dynamic issue. And you have to move and to follow your art and to change your views as much as you can change a tune. I can play, do you know what's new? What's new? Ba ba boo doo ba ba. Yeah? Do you know this tune? No, I try to think of a tune that you all know. Baba Blackbird. You know Baba Blackbird. Yeah, yeah. Baba Blackbird could be. And it could be as well. And there can be an Arabic version. I don't know if you can follow me, you know, but once you dismiss the eye and you surrender to the ear, this is when you start to hear and to understand the pain of the other. And this is the reason I'm busy. No, it's not mine, actually.
It's mine. Just have to wait for the finish. Okay.
Now, I decided not to address the issue of Greenstein in my talk, but I assume that there will be some questions about it. Hopefully, so I can, you know. But when the Hamas won, the first thing that we had to do is to say Salaam Aleikum, to congratulate them, and to congratulate the Palestinian people, to listen, rather than being dogmatic. I did it on the day. Who were the people who attacked me? I leave you to guess. And they still didn't approve. Greenstein still didn't approve the Hamas. Because he expect the Palestinians to be Bolshevik Jews. Which is interesting, I must admit. It's almost, it is almost funny. It is funny. But we have nothing to contribute to anyone unless we learn to listen. For me as a musician, it is all about that. And those amongst you come to hear my band, there is a lot of listening there. But I try to employ exactly the same strategy when I deal with humanitarian issues. And by the way, when I write about Jews, and I write some horrible things about Jewish identity, I do it because I listen to my own fears. Because I look in the mirror. And I'm naked, and I don't like what I'm seeing. And this is Otto Weininger. And this is our only contribution. And if you cannot do that, we better find another struggle. Because if we don't do that, what we do, and many of us are doing it, and maybe I sometime fall into this trap, all we do, and we are just engaged in self-loving, which is very Jewish, and self-assurance. Oh, I'm a Marxist, I'm such a wonderful guy. We are not going to help anyone being Marxists. And I just wrote about it. For too many years, this discourse of Palestinian solidarity was controlled by leftists. And I see myself as somebody that somehow is close to the left. But we have to admit it. We have badges, and we have kaffiyeh scarves, and I have a cup of coffee, kind of with a Palestinian flag. But we didn't manage to stop with this cup of coffee, a single F-16 or a single Merkava tank from flattening Palestine. We didn't manage to stop the wall with our idiotic badges, because we use all those symbols as identity signifiers for ourselves. And doing so, Palestine won't become a mass, Palestine Solidarity won't become a mass movement. We have nothing to offer the Palestinian people if you follow to wear more badges. I'm not against badges, but I think that you know where I'm aiming. I'm trying to tell you, we have to start to listen. And we don't understand what they do, when we don't understand what the other do, and it can be Palestine, it can be another 2,000 struggles around the world. This is where we have to ask ourselves, rather than blaming the other, how is it that we don't understand? And this is what I expect from myself, and I think that while more than just a few of us understand it, this struggle would look a bit better. That's it.
I must are we recording again, or are we? Because we're just about to start. Yeah. And I'll just announce it. Okay. We're just going. Gilad is just going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll go on to the questions, and we'll see where we run with that.
So the. I'll play What's New. You know What's New.
Yeah.
Gorgeous
lyrics.
I don't know lyrics. I know the lyrics in Hebrew. So the tune that I'm going to play, a kind of a cappella, I didn't bring my band, is What's New. Who composed it?
Don't know.
It's good. You compose many of the tunes that I play.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
questions.
First question.
Yeah.
For Gilad.
Yeah.
What do you mean by saying that anti-Semite is an empty signifier?
Did I say it?
No, yeah.
I just have to move back from the musical mode into a Judeo-centric this is gonna, it's a complicated issue. Okay. I assume that, and I know that quite a few years ago, after emancipation, it's a movement that's actually started in Austria, there was a negative reaction to Jews, especially after emancipation, because those who regarded themselves as anti-Semites didn't welcome Jews interfering with European society in Germany, in Austria. They saw it as Judification of Germanic culture. Wagner, who was seen, was a kind of a self-proclaimed actually anti-Semite, had a very bad experience in France, actually, in Paris. It was two Jews who were running the opera and didn't let him develop as much as he wanted to. However, once the Israeli state has been established, and the Israeli state is the Jewish state, they regard themselves as the Jewish state, we have a problem. Why do we have a problem? Because any form of Jewish hatred could be realized as a political reaction. Now, if you will hear tomorrow about international British international operation HSBC, whatever, you know what, you know, one of those being bombed in Turkey, in Istanbul, it happened a few years ago. You wouldn't regard it as a anti-British racist attack. You would see it as an attack against British interests. Now, the Jewish issue is very, very complicated, because we have Jews as racial, the Jewish people, the Jews, that is an ethnic or racially orientated identity. We have Judaism, that is a spiritual take. And we have Jewishness. And it is not clear how can we differentiate between the three, or between the three and maybe even four or five, you know. So far I just counted three: Jews, Judaism, Jewishness. Now, as long as Jewish people operate politically as Jews, e.g., rather than being Marxist, who happen to be Jewish, and we know many of those, they are Jewish Marxists, which is ludicrous, which is a joke, you know, because as far as we are Marxist, I really don't care if you are Indian, Jew, Iraqi, Muslim, I don't care about it, about your origin, you are a comrade. As long as Jewish people operate politically as Jews under the Jewish banner, they should be, they should anticipate being criticized as Jews. If you are Marxist who happen to be Jewish, and I tell you, you are a moron, sorry, it's not person, you know, you may be very cross with me, but, or you won't agree with me, you know, and you can answer as well, but you won't see it as a racist attack. But if you call yourself a Jewish Marxist, and I think that you are moral and a vandal, and I think I'm entitled to call you a Jewish vandal and a Jewish moron, because you prefer, you choose, you don't have to, you choose to operate under the Jewish banner. And this is why, once Israel has been established as a state, Jews stopped being a kind of ethnic identity. Now, we have a problem. Why do we have a problem? Because many Jews are, many Jews are implicated by the crime made by the crimes, many crimes made by Israel, yet they really have nothing to do with it. And this is something that we have to deal with. But I must say, I live in the West, in Britain, for 12 or 13 years, and I've never seen anything as such. So just the fact that we are dealing with anti-Semitism is to my opinion, slightly pathetic, because I've come across a lot of Islamophobia, but I've never come across a categorical hatred to Jewish people as a race. I'm sorry to say it, you know. You have here a small clan of, I presume, very small clan of Jewish anti-Zionists. Once we don't agree with them, they would obviously regard it as anti-Semitism. But no, we just don't agree with their political view. They choose to operate under the Jewish banner. They have to take responsibility for their own actions. And this is why, because we don't employ any racial categorization in our attack of Jews. And by the way, this is something that we have to remember. Have you ever come anyone who is employing hatred or even criticism of Jews as race? I doubt it. I doubt it. Why? Because they are not a race. They are not a race. They are racially orientated. So when you have here in Brighton a quite a noisy Jewish anti-Zionist, he himself operating in a political group, in an exclusive political group, that wouldn't allow you, I assume, or wouldn't invite you in because you're not circumcised enough. I don't know. You may be part of the group, but I just assume. You know. No, this is, you know. This is the real issue. This is why it is an empty signifier. Now, once you take off the racial weight out, if we don't attack Jews being a race, so we are left with identity politics, which is okay, and we are left with proper politics, which is absolutely okay. And therefore, there is no weight whatsoever to the notion of anti-Semitism. Now, it's definitely very effective as a silencing mechanism. I follow your introduction. It took you something like 35 years to spit it out. So it is very effective. It is very effective, and we were intimidated here. You know, as you probably realize, you know, you are Palestinian support, Palestinian solidarity activists, most of you. And you know that Palestinians are living in siege for, I don't know, how many years. And tonight, you had a chance to learn what it is to be in a siege. You call it siege? Yeah, my pronunciation is crap, so sometimes I have to, because people, what is going on? You know, yeah, we are in siege tonight. We are pushed into one room by a self-proclaimed Jewish politician. So we are very much, this is couldn't be a better event to identify with Palestine. Tonight, we understand what it is all about. And to say it is not anti-Semitism, is to stand up and to say enough is enough. And I didn't say how much I'm happy to see you all, you know, but I assume that you all know about this idiotic event that led to this, the chain of events that led into this wonderful gathering. And I'm very happy that you all stood up against it, you know.
Another question?
Yeah.
Right. What are your views on the Israeli peace movement? Did you consider joining and helping them?
Never. There is no Israeli peace movement. And I think that I addressed it in the talk. The Israeli peace movement is translated into Shalom movement. As I mentioned before, Shalom means security. Shalom means the continuation of the Jewish-only state. And it is not very surprising that the Israeli government now, and by the way, there were two good articles about it in Haaretz today. In Haaretz in English, so it's available for you as well. One by Akiva Eldar, I don't remember. Shragai was the other one. If you come home and you don't have nothing better to do, the Israeli realized that the reality on the ground is leading towards one state solution. It's inevitable. And the unilateral disengagement that is seen, and this is what the left was kind of trying to achieve all those years, and Olmert, at least ideologically, is following the left now, that let's get all those Arabs out and we are just Jews and we can continue eating gefilte fish for another 25 years because there is a demographic disaster. Now, Akiva Eldar wrote today, he said, when we declared this state in 48, the declaration of the Israeli state is talking about equality and absolute legal right to legal citizen rights for every person who is living in Israel. Now, with 40 years of occupation, I'm surprised that it took them 60 years, but now they reflect about it because it's 60 years to the declaration, you know, it's like Independence days, like in, I don't know, through a few months, you know, and they just read this declaration, said, oh, we fell behind. What, you know, clearly, we have a very minority of what they call Israeli Arabs. It's basically Palestinians who were resilient and didn't want to run away. And they have another 3 million or 4 million Palestinians who are living in atrocious conditions in areas controlled by Israel. Gaza is not an independent state. It is still Israeli-controlled territory, encircled, in siege. So, the peace movement in Israel, and this is something that I agree with Pape, I don't agree with him on many things. Thanks God he's a very reasonable human being, so he doesn't try to pick at me. You know, we are friends. But I had a meeting with Pape and another Israeli filmmaker. He's very interesting guy, Yael Sivan. I don't know if you've seen any of his film. He's living now in the UK. And he was asked about the question. They asked us, it was the BBC, and they asked, what is the difference between you three and the Israeli left? And Yael Sivan said, you see, the Israeli left, they go as far as 67. And we go back to 48. We understand that there is the right of return. And Pape agreed with him, and I felt that I have to interfere. And this is where I'm probably different from most people within this milieu. I said, why do we go to as far as 48? Why not to go to 36 or 29 or 1917, Balfour Declaration, or 1998, the first Zionist Congress? And if you go as far as 1998, why not to go as far as the French Revolution and emancipation? Because where you don't know, when once you start to deal with this question to do with history, who is there to decide when the narrative should start? And say, if you go as far as French Revolution, and by the way, I can go farther, you realize that problems to do with Zionism were implied with issues to do with Jewishness. And the more I think about it now, you know, so I'm leading to maybe many more questions. The more I think about it now, I think that the problem is not Zionism. Zionism is definitely a problem, and it's definitely part of the problem. But the problem, the real problem for me, is the support that Israel is getting from around the world. The American, the Israeli lobby in America is a disaster. But I tell you something else. Lord Levy, number one fundraiser for the Labour Party. David Abrams, who donated money to the Labour Party by proxy 4 years ago. Do you remember what happened 4 years ago? 4 years ago, this country was taken to a war, to an illegal war, by an idiotic Labour Party. This man was donating money by proxy. When he was asked, why did you donate money by proxy? He said, because I thought that if it would be revealed, it would look by like a conspiracy. This man was an idiot. It is a conspiracy. You should, it's like Prince time. Quiet, man. Just don't say it. Yeah, it's a conspiracy. He said it. I'm quoting him. It is a conspiracy. But where is the problem? The problem is that we all see it. I was invited to, anyway, I won't say it, but I had a chance to sit with a bunch of major journalists in this country, and they all saw it. And this simple sentence wasn't uttered in the British press. So we are still silenced. And if what it takes for this issue, you know, to be exposed, if all it takes is to present me as an anti-Semite and an idiot sticking flyers on a church, I can take it. I can take it. But this must be said. And sooner the better. And this is something that I told your local paper. It is better that it is said as soon as possible. For the British people, because this country, and I'm British now as well, this country is involved in a major genocide in Iraq. We are talking now about 1,200,000.
Exactly.
Yeah? So it's very important for you. It is very important for the Palestinians, for sure. It's very important for the Iraqis, but it is very important for the Jews as well. Because, yeah, I'm paying maybe a price for saying it, but it's a question before you all see it. And I must tell you that I look at you and you all see it. And this is very frightening. And this is very frightening. And I don't think the Jewish people should be implicated by David Abrams. I don't know much about him, but I'm not very impressed by his intellectual capacity. I don't know if I answered the question, but I said what I want to say.
Right. Why say Jewish lobby? Surely it is better to say a large number of Americans support Israel.
Because it is a Jewish... sorry, I understand. Why not to say... okay, you know that I'm actually one of those who say American Jews, you know, and I get a lot of problem with it. I, as a rule, try to be very careful. I'm careful enough, and I think that this is my duty, because some of my supporters asked me, Gilad, why can't you just stand up and say that and that and that? Because I said, once I say that, I'm finished. They will have enough power to silence me. And as things stand, they've managed to silence everyone. And if I'm silenced, I don't think that this thing will be aired, and I think that it's very important. Now, to answer your very specific question, it is very
not
easy for us.
Sorry.
to answer this question in very specific terms, it is very clear to us when we talk about the Jewish lobby or the Israeli lobby, you know, it is very clear that we are talking about Wolfowitz and the neocons, and we talk about Dershowitz, and, you know, it sounds like a Jewish wedding. You know, what can we do? You know, and Edelman and Perelman and Schmerelman and what? And then you come to England and Levi and Abrams. But I allow myself to talk about these people, to talk about these people, rather than talking about people with Jewish name that I don't know. You know, as long as IPAC is saying what it says, or the Jewish American. Sometimes it's shocking for me. I'm embarrassed, you know. I really want my foreskin back. Sometimes I am so embarrassed by stupidity. 6 months ago, I got it, but it's all, you know, I have it here. It's very small. But I keep it here. But the thing, no, sorry, this was Gerenstein one. Where's mine? But the thing is, is Gerenstein funny? Is he a funny man? Does he have a sense of humor?
Who is this?
Greenstein. No. Is he funny? He's not funny. This is his problem. You know. This is why he's not. I must be very sad. Git. Anyway. The thing is, and this is where it is very, very dangerous. And this is we saw a few days ago in the court Palestinian. Paul de Roots wrote something about Tony Greenstein. My big question, and if somebody can suggest to me, I'll be very delighted. Where the Wolfowitz stops and the Greenstein starts. This is the crucial issue. I know that Wolfowitz is doing his job, and he's very good at it, and he managed to get this country, you know, he's brilliant, you know, to serve what he regards as the Jewish cause or whatever. But we have a net, a very clever net, of gatekeepers. And one of the most interesting debate in the Palestinian solidarity around the world is the issue of Zionism, Jewishness, and colonialism. The Jewish socialists insist upon telling us that Zionism is colonialism. And I say, is it? If it is a colonialism, where is the mother state? You know, when you were a colonial state, you know, so you were sitting here and you sent some soldier to Britain, and after a few years they come back. How does it work? So is there a Jewish nation? If there is a Jewish nation, it's really frightening, like an international Jewish nation. How do we deal with this question? Zionism definitely have some colonialist aspects. But I can tell you that when I poo in the morning, there are some contractions that remind me as well the act of lovemaking. So would that mean that lovemaking is equal pooing? No. You know, there is a certain stage that we must stand up and say, don't bullshit us. Yet I ask, why do you push us into this discourse in which we have to say that Zionism is colonialism? And you know what is the answer? They do it because as long as we agree that Zionism is colonialism, then the Jews are as bad as the British and the French. So everything is okay. But it's not okay. Because the settlers who go with this shirt, and I don't know, you can check about it on the net, we kill Jesus, we kill you. You heard about this case? Yeah. It was kind of ICM people from Sweden. It's shocking. They are not colonialist. They are messianic. They really believe in what they are doing. And they don't serve any foreign interest. Not American. They serve the Jewish interest, what they regard. And by the way, I respect them. I fight them.
Right. Can Blair 2, I think this says, correct me if it's not right, can Blair 2, maybe Barack Obama, drive a meaningful change of direction of Israel to work with the Palestinian government?
For sure. I can't wait. Now, I don't know enough about American politics. However, there is a clip on YouTube where you can see Obama Hillary Clinton fighting to get support in AIPAC. Have you seen it? It's a really wonderful. It's a really wonderful clip, and they're both standing on the stool. Hey, come with us, we'll give you. Know, so I don't trust. I don't trust any politicians, not Obama and not Clinton, and I trust the Hamas, because the Hamas are the only people who realized that nothing, that the West is not going to solve their problem. And they are resilient, they are defiant, they are fighting. And if they ever need an orchestra, I want to be the the conductor. Thank you.